good morning, everyone. Glad that you're here bright and early. We're going to talk about gaseous emissions from beef and dairy cattle. We're going to focus on cattle now. I had some good input from my colleagues, Andy Cole and Heidi Waldrop, at our laboratory in Bushland, up in the panhandle of Texas. Kind of the reality, one of the realities that we face is that by emitting large amounts of greenhouse gases, we are disrupting the climate. And that holds some unpredictable and potentially dire consequences for humanity and for the planet. The United States, of course, greenhouse gases are dominated by fossil fuel burning. So petroleum, coal, and natural gas make up the majority of contributions to our greenhouse gas inventory. About 7% of the greenhouse gases emitted by the United States, so, can be attributed to agriculture. And when we break down that contribution of agriculture, there are a number of sorts. There's some animal sources, there's some cropland sources, but what we're going to focus on are these two pieces of the pie right here, that purple and green piece of the pie, that are directly attributable to animals. That comprises about a third of the agriculture greenhouse gas emissions. And those two pieces of the pie are predominantly methane. And that methane predominantly comes from the enteric fermentation in animals. And 85% of that methane is going to come from cattle, with most of that coming from beef cattle. Another gas that we're concerned about in cattle production is ammonia, and April touched on a number of the problems, potential environmental problems with ammonia. I'm calling it reactive N because ammonia is very chemically active, and it can change quickly in the atmosphere and in soils. But this, it can be a precursor to respirable particulates. Now, this looks like it's a fog in the Central Valley of California, but that's actually particulate haze. And you get this problem when you have emissions of ammonia that mix with industrial air pollution and create these particulates. When ammonia and reactive N rains out of the atmosphere, it can impact terrestrial ecosystems by over-fertilizing them. In this case, we looked at a pasture that was downwind from a feed yard. This is 40 years before this picture. It was short grass prairie in this picture, and after being downwind of a feed yard for 40 years, it had become over-fertilized and it turned into a weed patch of kochia and pigweed. A similar thing can happen in aquatic ecosystems. They can be over-fertilized, and it leads to enhanced algal growth. And finally, you can get an expression of over-fertilization like this, with the so-called dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico, where you have from anywhere from 1 to 2 million tons of reactive nitrogen a year washing down the Mississippi River into the Gulf of Mexico and creating this anoxic bottom zone. I want to briefly talk about how nitrogen flows through feed yards to kind of give you an idea of what we're dealing with. That nitrogen ultimately comes from the atmosphere. The Haber-Bosch process has kind of revolutionized agriculture. That's part of the Green Revolution that we hear so much about. It takes natural gas and N2 from the atmosphere and creates the ammonium fertilizer that drives food production. And what we're going to do is follow 100 units of nitrogen as it flows to the feed yard. About 15 units of that nitrogen is going to be retained as in the animal. That means that they excrete 85% of the N onto the pen surface. And some of that will run off into what we call retention ponds. These are not treatment lagoons, but just structures that are intended to hold water. About 20% of fed nitrogen is removed from the pen surface and ends up in stockpiles or compost or is field applied. And what we find typically is about 50% of the nitrogen that's fed to beef cattle in feed yards is volatilized and emitted as ammonia. We recognize there's two sources really of ammonia in feed yards. The first is a what we call a fast source, and it's predominantly the urea in urine, which is hydrolyzed to form ammonium. And then there's also a slow source in the more complex nitrogenous compounds in the feces. And through the influence of temperature, pH, and some meteorological conditions, ammonia is emitted into the atmosphere. This is kind of a representative table of ammonia emissions taken from the literature. I recommend highly the review by Hristov et al. That was in the Canadian Journal of Animal Science this year. They have a much more comprehensive table, but I kind of pulled out some of the representative studies. They span anywhere from studies that were conducted in Alberta all the way down to Texas. One thing you might notice is that the methodology is fairly standardized. OPL is open path lasers, and IDM is an inverse dispersion modeling that's used to quantify emissions. That methodology is particularly useful in feed yards because they tend to be fairly standardized, and compared to something like dairies, they're much simpler in their configuration and in their management. But we see that emissions show us kind of a couple of basic characteristics. Winter emissions tend to be about one half that of summer emissions. And that makes sense because the chemical processes of ammonia are very sensitive to temperature. And the other thing you notice is that we probably are, the average of this is probably emissions on an annual basis, about 120 grams per head per day, and with summer emissions about 140 and winter emissions about 70. And there's some variation in these numbers, but they tend to fall pretty well within that range. One exception is this number right here in the study of Van Harlem in Alberta. That was a very unusual study in that they fed they were feeding dry distillers grains, and they ended up with rations with very high crude protein, over 20%, which contributed to those emissions. If we look at a range of studies on the basis of the fractional ammonia loss, that's the fraction of ammonia N loss, a fraction of nitrogen intake lost as ammonia. These include some different studies that we saw previously, some mass balance studies from Nebraska in particular. Again, the summer emissions tend to fall in this 60% range, and winter emissions in about 30% range. And that's that. When you annualize those, you get what we call the keep it simple, stupid model of ammonia emissions. If you take one half of your nitrogen intake, now this is if you feed rations that meet the animal's protein needs and you do everything right, about half of the nitrogen that you feed is going to be lost as ammonia. And This is a very simple formula, but in very many instances, this will allow you to estimate ammonia emissions probably within the same air bars as if you had measured them. Let's look at dairy emissions. Oh my. What we find with dairy ammonia emissions is that they're much more variable. Now, when you think about it, this makes sense because dairy emissions, the dairy production systems are much more variable, so we would tend to get variable emissions. We go anywhere from open lot dairies to tie stall barns, some ventilated, some naturally. So you get a much greater range in emissions. And when we talk about mitigating ammonia emissions, we can do a number of things. We can reduce the amount of nitrogen that goes into animals. We can block the hydrolysis of urea by inhibiting urease activity. Or we can somehow bind that ammonium so that it's not available for volatilization. Here's a study by Andy Cole where he looked at a binder zeolite and a urease inhibitor and found that they did reduce ammonia emissions, but when they used in combination, they tend to have a synergistic effect that further reduced ammonia emissions. Here's some work that we did looking at 2 years of ammonia emissions. When they fed about the same crude protein, the ammonia emissions at these two feed yards were similar. But when this feed yard fed dry distiller grains, the crude protein increased and the ammonia emissions increased by 50%. So one of the complicating factors in ammonia emissions is feeding distillers grains. You can implement what we call phase feeding, which is actually reducing the amount of crude protein toward the end of a feeding period and getting a reduction of ammonia emissions. I'm going to go through these fairly quickly so we can hit enteric methane. Are you going to beat me up yet? Okay. The rumen is basically a mesophilic anaerobic fermentation vessel. It breaks down complicated carbohydrates into simple carbohydrates, and then it ferments those and produces CO2, H2O, and volatile fatty acids. The CO2 is further reduced into methane. When we look at beef cattle emissions, we see a pretty wide range of methane emissions from beef cattle facilities. But you also see that we have a number of different situations here. We have respiration chambers, small pens, and commercial feed yards, which contribute to that variation. Dairy cattle, the first thing you notice here is that the dairy cattle enteric methane emissions are much higher than the beef cattle, and that's due to the coarser diets that are fed to dairy cattle compared to the high concentrate diets of beef cattle. And when we think about how we're going to mitigate enteric emissions, one of the first things that we can do is manipulate diets so that there are more readily digestible feedstuffs. And we can also use some additives that will shunt some of this H2 into propionic acid and increase this propionic to acetic acid ratio, which will help us reduce enteric methane. I'm going to go through these.
1 minute.
Thank you. Well, ammonia emissions represent significant loss of N. On average, probably half of the nitrogen fed is lost. It's very sensitive to crude protein. In dairies, manure management is important because if you can remove manure more quickly and put it in a management situation, you have a better chance of reducing those emissions. And we feel that modifying diet and reducing crude protein while still maintaining production is one of the best ways to mitigate ammonia. Methane emissions increase as carbohydrate complexity increases. That's why dairy emissions are consistently greater than feed yard emissions. Dairy emissions are also more variable because the production complexity of dairies is much greater than feed yards. And combining a number of mitigation options, including diet and additives that change rumen function, may be the best option. Efficiency of production is often touted as a way to do it, but if we increase efficiency of production, we may increase efficiency, but unless we lower the actual emissions, we're not doing the atmosphere any good. So thank you.